ESPN College Football Podcast, hosted by Paul Feinbaum and Matt Barry.
It is your Sunday tradition, unlike any other. Paul Feinbaum, Matt Barry on the ESPN College Football Podcast. It was a Sunday that gave us a little bit of drama. 7 and 8 go down. It was void of any big time matchup, Paul, but overall, I think we saw on Saturday that had been going on all season, which is if you're in the top 10, doesn't matter who you're playing, you were in danger of getting upset on any given week.
No, as you flipped around, especially those early games, I was on a plane, so I was kind of like you, locked into everything my screen had. You got a good glimpse of some of the teams that are being talked about for the playoffs, and that I wasn't impressed. I wasn't impressed with Cincinnati. I certainly wasn't impressed with Oklahoma. And even before I could complete the sentence about Penn State, that was taken care of me by the most ridiculous game. I boarded a plane in Memphis. I had to change planes in Atlanta to get home. I kid you not, the overtime was on the entire flight. And I missed the end because I was just getting off to find my next plane. And it was funny. Everyone in my section was watching the game, and we were all groaning collectively about how utterly bad it was. And quite frankly, everyone was caught off guard. Nobody knew what was happening because I wasn't listening with sound. I was trying to flip around game after game. And I kept thinking, why are they doing this? I mean, then I realized they changed the rule, which I'm sure you are far more aware of than I was sitting in the studio.
So let's stay there for a second. I've had more people comment me via social media, in person, or whatever the case might be. Like, I created the new overtime rule. Like, it was me that came in and said, hey, after two overtimes, let's all go for 2-point conversions. What do you think of it? Because yesterday, I had to say it with an asterisk because it was the most overtimes in FBS history, but it really wasn't because you're just exchanging possessions, not starting at the 25. What did you think of the first real time that we got a look at the massive overtime with the new rules?
I didn't like it at all. I thought it was gimmicky and really fraudulent. And I sat through many, many years ago, I think a 7-overtime game. And it is exhausting, but at least it's football, Matt. I mean, you have to do most of, not everything, but the basic fundamentals that it takes. And this was a freak show. I didn't like it at all. And it just left me with a very bad feeling. And I didn't care who won. I mean, either one of these teams were probably going anywhere. Penn State was going to be eliminated the next week anyway. I was happy for Brett Bielema to see him. I mean, he now has wins at Lincoln and Happy Valley. That should be enough in most normal years to get you an extension. But this thing went past me. I understand the reaction or the overreaction to the LSU Texas A&M game, but this is a terrible plan.
Why can't college, and we were talking about it yesterday in studio, Galloway and Acho and I, why can't college do what the NFL does? Do a coin flip and then play football for 15 minutes and see what happens.
Yeah.
With that in mind, I mean, they could even do it and eliminate the, hey, field goal, you get another chance. They could do sudden death if they wanted to. I just don't understand how that makes the game any better, going for 2-point conversions from the 3-yard line and then swapping ends for whoever has the advantage. I just don't feel like that's football.
Well, it would be like settling the Masters after, you know, two holes in, you know, okay, we play 15, we play 16, the great par 3, and then at 17, let's just get in the bunker. And by the way, I'm not even sure they have a bunker on 17, but you would know that more than I would. But it's just it's not football, and it wasn't. I understand the concept, but it's happened 3 or 4 times in the history of the game. Let these teams play out, as opposed to doing something you rarely do, which is a 2-point conversion.
You know, we learn. In situations like this, we learn a lot about play callers because play callers like to fancy themselves as really smart, and a lot of the time they are. What I learned about college football on Saturday, you get a team inside the 5-yard line, and I obviously they've got separate ball plays on for 2-point conversions, but the play calling down in that end of the field just gets, I don't know, it gets different. you're not getting the best case scenario for the players and the execution. I'd call it fun with an asterisk to watch it. 'Cause you're like, who's going to score? When, who's going to break serve? It was like being all deuce in a tennis match. I would love this to be reevaluated at some point.
Well, I make a motion that it's reevaluated and we'll move on to the next subject.
Done, because everyone blamed me for the new overtime rule anyway. So there you have it. Oklahoma, you'd mentioned some of the playoff teams that were less than stellar. I think Ohio State, maybe Alabama in the second half are the most impressive teams in terms of those we think have playoff potential. I make the argument, I'll make it again today. Yeah, Oklahoma, they slept in the first half against Kansas. It was ugly. It was stupid. They didn't look good at all. But Caleb Williams finds his magic, and they found a way in the second half to step up and win 35-23. I think that needs to be more of the focus than the bad football we saw in the first half.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, listen, we don't need to, you know, for most of it, these noon games sound bad enough. But if you're in Kansas, it's 11 o'clock in the morning. I mean, the sun doesn't even come up in Kansas until sometime near that. And it's hard. Listen, I get it. But you're right. Caleb Williams is so impressive. I put him in a Heisman list today, and I got a lot of flack. The Heisman, I don't really care what you did in the first two or three weeks. Your team's undefeated, and you are really the reason they are undefeated. That's pretty significant. So I'm impressed. Oklahoma had some really big games ahead. We all know that. We know where those games are, and I think that will take care of itself.
Do you think the Big 12's doing it right? I know they're easy to get on and kind of go at, but isn't there something to be said about this round robin they do because there aren't divisions? For some reason, they were the easiest to pick on, but I have a feeling here week 9 and then for the rest of the regular season, save for the Big 10 East, even though they still have to do divisions East and West, Big 12 might get this thing right with everyone having to play each other. And you can't dispute at the end of this season who the best team in that conference is going to be because they have to settle it on the field with everyone playing one another.
No, I like that. And, you know, there's so many leagues where, you know, Big 10, SEC, where you are – it's Russian roulette. You know, who are you going to get? And, you know, sometimes you really hit the jackpot. And you in this case, you know, this year, Georgia, and they got to avoid Alabama during the regular season. They had them last year. It's a pretty big break, wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
I mean, I know they played Clemson early in the year. Well, I as I say that, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but I think we now can take the Clemson game off of Georgia's resume. We don't need to hype that one anymore about, you know, what the two teams were ranked at the time. But I agree with your basic premise. It is the Big 12 has fun games. Like them or not, they have entertained us all year long.
There's so much to play. I mean, Bedlam took a little bit of a hit with Oklahoma State losing to Iowa State. You know, you and I have talked about this on this podcast maybe about 2 to 3 weeks ago. I forget. Maybe it was after the Iowa State Baylor game when Baylor beat Iowa State. We wanted to just kick the Cyclones to the curb.
Yeah, I got rid of them early.
Yeah, here they are again. I mean, we're at the end of October. They're 3-1 in league play. They're still very much in the conversation of winning the Big 12 championship. But what that does to the conference's playoff situation, if Oklahoma were to trip up in the regular season, There's good and bad to it. There's good because we're going to know who the best team in the conference is. There's bad because it could be a dog-eat-dog situation. But with the way Oklahoma's playing right now, I think Oklahoma State was ripe for an upset. And Iowa State now and Baylor. I mean, you're not going to have any question marks there, Paul. And you're not going to have any question marks in the Big Ten East because if you look at the remaining schedule for Michigan, Ohio State, Michigan State, this is all going to get settled on the field, and I don't know when the last time we could say that about a lot of these conferences.
No, and the Big Ten Six is taking a bow right now because it is going to own the sport for the next couple of weeks, Matt. And I'll send you SOSs from SEC games, but there's one really good one I'm going to this weekend. But the Big Ten has all the games right now.
Is Ohio State a top two team right now? Top three team?
Yeah, I don't play chess, but I know people who do. And if I answer that question, I'm going to get checkmated because I know where you're coming from. And It's a as soon as you answer that question, it's oh yeah, it's you know, they should be number two in the country. Then here comes some duck quacking at me, saying, "Well, what about Oregon?" And it's a fair question.
I don't think it is anymore. Look, you get judged on numerous things in college football. Ohio State that week, Oregon played their best game. Have you seen anything out of Oregon since week two that would make you believe that they could beat Ohio State again?
No, but how do we do this? And that's why we'll be listening very closely, as much as it pains me, to the chairman of Augusta National, excuse me, the chairman of the CFP in 2 weeks, telling us, you know, what is what.
But, okay, style points. We're back in the BCS era, and Cincinnati needs them. Have you seen anything out of Cincinnati to make you believe that they could beat Ohio State?
No. I found some religion over the weekend, Matt, because I was fortunate.
Oh,
yeah, I was fortunate on my my weekly SportsCenter thing where I didn't have to rank and file like I do every other week, because I wouldn't have put Cincinnati in my top four. I'm sick of that. That is laughable. They are not a top four team. They wouldn't. Who are they going to beat? Can they beat Georgia? No. Can they beat Alabama? No. Can they beat Ohio State? No. So, I mean, they're, I haven't even thought of that the next team they can't beat. But I'll know probably at after the end of Saturday's game, depending on how Michigan State goes. And I'm sick of it. I'm guilty. I played the game for a few weeks. I'm not playing it anymore. The Cincinnati Bearcats are not one of the top four teams in the country. I watched the game yesterday. Nothing impressive. They were playing, you know, you can tell me, oh yeah, you know, playing a Navy, that's always a challenge. Well, I don't want to hear it.
Cincinnati is going to get the drum pounded for them because they will be undefeated going into SMU. I think that game's November 20th.
Yes.
And here's where the playoff committee needs to think about a couple of things. We live now in a society, as you well know, where people are very loud about their opinions of what's wrong, what's right, give everybody a chance. The playoff committee needs to understand one of the biggest momentums the sport has right now is college football playoff expansion. What happens if you give Cincinnati a bid and they get their doors blown off by, let's call, they'd be the four seeds. So let's say the one seed's Georgia. People are going to say, well, remember, we've been in the bowl game. Okay. What happens if Georgia just absolutely annihilates them? What does that do for playoff expansion talk?
It hurts.
And so, look, that's not Cincinnati's fault. They got to play the games that are in front of them. But the way that the only team, I can't even, would they be, did you mention Oklahoma? Would they beat Oklahoma?
I'm undecided on that.
It's a tough one because I'm leaning with you with how some of these teams are coming up now with the way, especially Ohio State's playing, with the way Oklahoma's found some magic with Caleb Williams. Alabama stubbed their toe. They still make some mistakes. They did so against Tennessee, but they're still the better team. It's going to be tough because people will scream to the college football heaven.
Let them scream.
And you'll get out there and make the case of why they're not one of the best four teams.
And the one thing that I did pick up this week, and they'll get it, they'll get a paper version, but I interviewed Mike Oresko, mm-hmm. who last year was beating on the microphone. He's the commissioner of the AAC, for those of you who don't live in these waters. He was beating and drumming. Oh, Cincinnati. We had him on the other day. Not very – it's like – the family of you know, the in-laws of an about to be divorced couple. I mean, they're courteous until they get the thing signed. He didn't give two rips about Cincinnati, even though, I mean, he'll show up at the CFP as the commissioner of the AAC if they make it. But now that they have flown the coop, it was quite interesting to talk. He was talking about, well, you know, they've done a lot for us, but we've also done a lot for them. What?
Yeah, and Cincinnati's obviously heading to the Big 12. So there's going to be an argument. It's what makes the sport great. But the win against Indiana, I don't know, looks that impressive anymore. They avoid Houston in the regular season. I believe the only chance they'd play Houston is in the American Championship. If things ahead of them on the leaderboard and everyone comes back to the pack, maybe they have an argument. But at least right now, the way some of these other teams are starting to come on. And one of those teams, we tend to stick on a team, have a good story, dismiss them, then we're going to come back to them. I want to come back to the team at the site of SEC Nation, which was Ole Miss. Ole Miss has one loss on the season. And they're playing good football. They had an opportunity to run into an emotional LSU team. They get the win 31-17. Matt Corral needs to be very squarely in the Heisman conversation based on how he's playing. Ole Miss is a team that could find themselves, I don't know if the new rankings have come out, Ole Miss could find themselves inside the top 10 at some point. Yeah, they are. You know, new rankings did come out. We're taping this right around 4 p.m. Eastern. They're 10th in the country now. I mean, that's a good football team. And the defense is improving a little bit. I mean, would you put – could Ole Miss beat Iowa?
Yeah.
Could Ole Miss beat Michigan State?
I think so, yeah. I mean, I think the real question is could they beat Cincinnati or Oklahoma?
And I think the answer to both of those is yes. With the offense that they have, with the weapons they have, maybe defensively they could struggle a little bit. But we're getting into a very – interesting stage of arguments. As I look down the rankings, if Pitt doesn't lose to Western Michigan, I know they did, but if they didn't, where are we talking about Pitt? They're 17th.
You're right. Remember back, well, you probably weren't paying a lot of attention, but maybe you were. I think it was an ESPN noon game, but Tennessee got no favors having Pitt come in this year. That looked like a win. Little did we know, but yeah, you talk about Ole Miss. I mean, there are a lot of teams Ole Miss could beat right now. And that's, I think, what you have to – I mean, I'll even say this. But Texas A&M, I think, is another one of those that they've already blown their season, but they are playing really well right now.
How did they lose to Arkansas and Mississippi State?
They – you know, remember that they're still playing without Haynes King, the starting quarterback, which doesn't mean as much today as it did on the first weekend. Nick, you know, Calzada just was lost, and there's another theory making the rounds, and this has yet to be proven, that Jimbo was, you know, had the Alabama game circled, and this sounds crazy, but I've heard it from knowledgeable people that he frankly just did not put enough attention to not it wasn't the Arkansas game, but it was the Mississippi State game that they completely blew.
Tape doesn't lie. And if you watch the tape against Alabama and you watch the tape against Mississippi State, it's a completely different team. I mean, the Texas A&M teams that's playing right now on Saturdays, that's the one we thought we were getting Labor Day weekend when the football started. And so it's so – you cannot miss in this sport. You cannot afford to sleep. And all undefeateds aren't created equal. But when I look at this and I look at Michigan and Michigan State, one of them is going to have a loss after the weekend. Ohio State's perfect in conference. However, they lost to Oregon in week two. Another undefeated team, Wake Forest. How much respect or lack of respect do we need to be giving Wake Forest?
It's hard to answer that. But I mean, we've already talked about what a great job they're doing down there in Clawson, et cetera. But they're just not going to face anybody this year that really matters. And that's to their detriment.
What do you have in terms of, as I look at the schedule here in the next couple of weeks, what do you think ultimately the decision is going to come down to in terms of these one loss teams? Because the rankings right now, There's going to be a collection of one-loss teams.
There's no question, and I think Oregon, Ohio State are, you know, certainly in that conversation. You know, we don't need to worry about Alabama as a one-loss team because they take care of themselves. If they're a one-loss team, they're in. If they're not, if they lose to Georgia, it's a moot point. You could argue maybe it shouldn't be, but it is going to be. So I think it's hard to do a lot of handicapping right now, Matt, from that standpoint, because of the Big Ten logjam. Mm-hmm. So many games.
You will be at the I don't think we're allowed to call it a cocktail party anymore. So I think you're going to be at Georgia, Florida.
I think that's just an SEC rule. So, or I don't know, maybe it could be an ESPN rule. The world, it used to be called, for those who don't know, somebody described it years ago as the world's largest outdoor cocktail party, self-explanatory. It's, it is a game in Jacksonville every year that's really unlike any other. It is a party. It's not the state fair, OU in Texas. It's not Army, Navy. It's just, you know, grab your condo 5 years in advance, go down to Sawgrass, try to get on TPC.
This sounds lovely.
It starts on Monday or Tuesday, and you have to remember to go to the game Saturday afternoon.
Do you have any faith in Florida?
None. And that has become a really interesting story, Matt, where I live, because it seems like it's a fait accompli that Todd Grantham is going to be gone at the end of the season. Fans do not want to see Emory Jones anymore. They want to see Anthony Richardson. It seems like the both will play against the Dogs. And quite frankly, I think this is a critical game for Dan Mullen in the sense of how does he come out of this? A loss to the number one team would be the fourth of the season. That would match last year's four games. And that is not acceptable. Now, hear me clearly. He's okay. Not getting fired. I mean, right. He just got an extent. But it is going to put him in an awkward position. His popularity with the fan base is going to evaporate quickly if this game goes really poorly.
Because you mentioned that would be their fourth loss of the season. But as I look at their schedule, they're at South Carolina. That's a win. They've got Samford. That's a win. They've got Missouri. You would think that's a win. And based on how Florida State looks, you'd think that's going to be a win to end the season. So you're looking at 8-4.
They'll end well, it's not going to help. It's not going to help him though.
What conversation then needs to happen with Dan Mullen? Because you're right. They got rid of a guy. I mean, obviously the tenure with which the last coach left was a little bit awkward and difficult. But Mullen had an opportunity. I mean, they won the East twice with McElwain. And Georgia right now is a buzzsaw. It is so tough right now because I think coaches getting judged on what they do in the SEC West with Saban hanging around is just as unfair as at least right now with what Georgia's been doing under Kirby Smart.
And Matt, the issue isn't as much how many wins or losses. The issue is recruiting. Dan Mullen has not been able to compete at the upper echelon. You look at, the ESPN rankings, he might still be 11 or 12 or 8 or 9. That's not good enough in the SEC. Because, usually you have, usually you have four SEC teams in the top six or seven or eight. And that means that you're still failing. You're falling behind Georgia. They're not coming close to Georgia right now. And, why can't he recruit better? A lot of people say it's his personality. I'm not a psychiatrist. But he has a hard time recruiting multiple five-star athletes, which Nick Saban and Kirby Smart, they go to the drive-thru and get those.
What have you heard lately in an LSU situation?
It's really hard to chisel that one down. There are some who believe the AD Scott Woodward wants, you ready for this, Dabo Sweeney. Now, there's talk that the president wants Mel Tucker. Billy Napier is out there as maybe a second tier selection if everyone else goes bust. Seems like Jimbo's out of that one. Does James Franklin pop back into these? I don't know, but I think after yesterday, James Franklin might be looking around saying, what else can I do here? This is not, it's a good job, but it certainly isn't getting easier. So, Dabo Sweeney's, it's not really a big deal anymore when Clemson loses, but that loss yesterday, Matt, that was a dagger. I'm not going to go back and recreate all the stuff we've already talked about here, but to me, that was a seismic loss.
They benched DJU in the middle of it because he just hadn't been playing well. Does the fact that Clemson is struggling a little bit perhaps make Dabo look a little bit?
I think when you're Dabo Sweeney, and outside of Nick Saban, the college football world has revolved around you for 7 years. And you wake up and you flip on SportsCenter, and the only reason you're on there is that you bench your Heisman Trophy favorite quarterback. Nobody cares about them anymore. And I mean, they're not relevant. They're not going to a good bowl game. Fair. I mean, where are they going with that many losses? And they may have more.
It is so. That was a game we were talking about. Georgia Clemson seems like it was last year.
Yeah.
I can't. If I'd have told you at the beginning of the season and was just screaming that Spencer Rattler and DJU were going to get benched at some point of this season, I'd have had my college football credentials revoked.
That may be the story of the college football season right now.
You think?
What's the takeaway from the fact that the top two Heisman favorites aren't starting any longer? And another one, JT Daniels, because of injury, still struggling to get his spot back.
You know, stay there for a second. We're through week 8. We're going into week 9, final week of October, which is hard to believe we're already at that point. If you did, Paul, have to give me one big storyline as we head into the final month of the season, November, how would you characterize this year? Because I'm struggling coming up with talking about this week and that. We just didn't have a marquee game. We had 7 and 8 go down, but I don't think anyone was really sold on Penn State and Oklahoma State that big anyway. But I can't put my finger on what it is about this year that has made it unique, unlike any other year we've had.
Yeah, I think what I hear week to week going around campuses is it's just so different than it was last year. I know you've heard that because you're doing games and you're talking to people and you're out there as well. But last year, I think it opened Pandora's box for unpredictability. And I think that's why we are experiencing some of this right now. But, you know, I don't want to harp on Clemson, but, you know, they and Alabama were pretty much the co-picks to win it all this year. And, you know, we're in the South. They're still last night, I wish you could have seen my phone when Tennessee went up on Alabama. It was like, what in the world is going on here? and then it was close. I mean, you were following the game. And all of a sudden, these impenetrable forces in college football, Dabo and Saban, which we have not had a pair like this in a long time, are both looking vulnerable. Dabo is out of it. Saban's hanging on right now. I mean, certainly in a lot better shape than almost anyone else. But and on top of that, I mean, let's state the obvious from last Sunday. The guy who won it all in 2019, you know, is out of work at Ogeron. So
that's a great point. That's the way that it's changed in the matter of weeks. And you said it, Dabo's owned the sport. Dabo didn't have an offense. Dabo can't beat Pitt. And when Clemson is not good, the ACC just isn't talked about.
No.
And so as they go down the stretch, we mentioned Wake Forest earlier. We talked about Pitt, NC State, a bad loss to Miami. Every week, I feel like we're repeating the same story. We know, but we just don't know. Because I can't remember the last time going into week 9 of the season. And we do those rankings every week, right? That's a SportsCenter question. Rank your top 4.
Oh, yeah.
You could throw in a different 4 every week, and I don't think anyone could yell at you for being wrong.
No, and Ohio State's the one that I think you have to be the most careful about, because you could put Ohio State 2 easily, 3. You can put Alabama. And, you know, and I don't know whether this, you know, and by the way, we'll save it for 2 weeks from now. The committee does not do, what people misinterpret the committee rankings as if that really means anything. They're giving you a snapshot as of this moment. They're not factoring in what you and I are factoring in is how that team is going to do the rest of the way.
Those first rankings are for conversation only. That's it. I go back to year one of the college football playoff when TCU was 3rd. They had a bad Iowa State team at the time to wrap up the season. They went from 3rd to 5th the week before the final play. You knew TCU was going to win their final game, and somehow TCU went from the 3rd best team in the country the week before in the rankings. They were bounced the week after. The first college football rankings are for conversation. Gives you a brief snapshot of how they're thinking, but this, for the first time in a while, championship weekend, when you think about all the possibilities, it's going to live up to that. How many times over the past few years did the conference championships were like, yeah, well, who cares? We know who's getting in.
Well, we thought at least the SEC, you were going to have two teams playing an exhibition. You know, if Alabama and Georgia had both been undefeated, it would be like, okay, what's the point? There's no, that's not even, that's a TV entertainment 4-hour window. That's not really deciding anything other than who the first seed is and maybe the third seed. Now it really matters, at least for
this
Alabama.
Year could, yeah, if Alabama stays the course and wins out, I mean, it's a de facto playoff game. We think Georgia, no matter what, if they were to win out, which I don't have any reason to believe otherwise, that they would get in with one loss, even if Alabama were to narrowly escape them. But that's weeks ahead, championship weekend. I want to leave you with this, Paul, because we used to do this back in the day on SportsCenter on Saturday mornings. I'd say, Paul, write the headline for tomorrow. So we're going to incorporate that weekly here to the podcast. I'm going to have Paul write the headline for next week. The slate, it's okay. We got Michigan and Michigan State. You guys will be at Florida, Georgia. Got another big one in the SEC as well. So write the headline for me as we embark on week 9. The other big one of the SEC is Ole Miss, Auburn.
Yeah, I think it starts in the Big Ten. I think all eyes are on Jim Harbaugh. And, you know, this is a guy that I have buried. I have been to Lowe's and Home Depot buying the biggest shovels I can find, because I have now repositioned him in all his maize and blue. And with a win against Michigan State, which should not have been considered that big of a deal when August ended. You know, he is back where he was a couple of years ago, waiting for Ohio State. So that I think it's all about Harbaugh.
So are you saying that you would take those shovels and dig him up?
Yeah. I've already done that.
You already dug him up.
I dug him up. Yeah, I did it after the Northwestern game. I wasn't impressed by them. Do you think they're going to beat Michigan State?
I do.
Yeah, I do too. So
I think they're better than Michigan State. I don't think they're better than Ohio State. That's the problem every year in the Big Ten. These teams have great seasons. They're just built differently. If you watch a Big Ten game, Paul, there is the Big Ten, and then there's Ohio State.
So my headline Sunday morning is Harbaugh back from the dead.
Here we go. It all sets up for the game, the big game against Ohio State, and see if that's good enough. Don't forget Bald Men on Campus, a new ESPN podcast hosted by Jay Billis, LaFonso Ellis, and Seth Greenberg. These ESPN basketball personalities give you an all-access pass inside the world of college basketball, talking to the biggest names in the sport. That's Bald Men on Campus. Listen wherever you get your podcast, because Paul has hair and I have hair as well. We can never be the Bald Men on Campus. We'll be the partially haired podcast with ESPN football. So next week, Paul, we'll see if Jim Harbaugh is resurrected from the dead after he beats Michigan State. Can't wait to hear about your time in Jacksonville. Will Georgia, you're not a gambling guy, I get that, but will Florida keep it within double digits?
I'm leaning toward a route.
Okay. All right. We'll revisit that. We'll revisit a Harbaugh and much more as we are in the final weekend of October. I've said it again. It is hard to believe we are already there, but what a season it's been to this point. As always, we appreciate your download and listen each and every week on a Sunday edition of the ESPN College Football Podcast.